And I'm Josh Carter. So today, we're going to be covering the movie Striking Distance, directed by Roddy Harrington, written by Roddy Harrington and Marty Kaplan, known as Martin Kaplan.
I'm going to pause real quick. Is it Roddy or Rowdy?
Ooh, good question.
Both sound silly, but I feel like we should know.
Raw Dog Harrington.
Oh, yeah, that's probably it. That's how you pronounce it.
So get together, have a few laughs.
Uh-oh. Shit, lady, do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
Lady, put the freaking gun down on the ground right now. Take your shot across the freaking street and say that until we come and get you.
Hello, and welcome to Where There's a Willis, There's a Way, a film podcast about the multitude of works by Bruce Willis. My name is Kendrick Martin.
And I'm Josh Carter. Today we will be covering Striking Distance, a movie directed by Rowdy Harrington, written by Rowdy Harrington, and Marty/Martin Kaplan. For first-time listeners, on this podcast we do an in-depth breakdown of a movie starring Bruce Willis, both from a film perspective as well as his individual contribution. We'll add the movie to our rankings, talk trivia, and then whisk the Wheel of Willis.
You can find all of our previous episodes at williswaypod.com. We're also a part of the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network, so if you like movies around action heroes, similar to Bruce Willis, head on over to lastoftheactionheroes.com. You can rate and review us on iTunes, and we'll read your review on air. Before we get real deep into this movie, Josh, what would you rate this movie, Striking Distance?
That's a good question. Based on the fact that, like, the Willis ranking a movie out of a Bruce Willis is just kind of determining whether or not we recommend people watch it. I have a really hard time with it because it's like, it's a kind of a movie where it is what you think it is, but I liked what it thought it was. So I'd say that I would recommend, based on that, I'm going to give this movie a Bruce W out of Bruce Willis.
All right. I like it. I was also stuck in the same problem of I enjoyed this movie for what it was, but I would have a hard time recommending it.
Yeah.
And we'll get into more why later. But I think based purely on our flawless ranking system of rating a movie a Bruce Willis out of a Bruce Willis, I am going to just rate it a Bruce.
Okay.
So just barely enough to say it's worth watching.
Oh, and I thought that it was a Bruce W was enough to say it was worth watching.
Oh, no,
I
was under the impression anything, well, yeah, I don't know what the science is here, but I feel like, okay, that probably makes sense. Anything greater than a Bruce is...
Yeah.
Worth watching. So I'll have
I thought
to
it was
Bruce,
anything greater
Bruce
than a Bruce
W. Okay. Yeah, I'll have to go with Bruce W also. Well, no, I'm going to stick to my guns. You said Bruce W. I'm going to go Bruce.
All right. A little bit of contention here.
Yeah, we're getting into a fight now.
Yeah, woo.
This movie is unique in that, unlike most of the movies we've covered so far, it definitely has plot twists. So we're going to not reveal the whole movie up front, and then we'll have a pause before we dive into some spoilers, because there's a mystery to be solved with this movie and some surprises. So
that is correct.
Look forward to that. Before we get into Striking Distance, we have an email to read.
Woo!
If you are interested in emailing us, you can send an email to williswaypod@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at williswaypod. You can also find our Facebook page if you search for the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network over on Facebook. So I will read you this email. This email comes from Nathan. Hello, great episode about Death Becomes Her. I heard you both talking about critics and ratings that differ from audiences, and you may be thinking of one of two tropes. Vindicated by history, when something comes out and is panned or audiences are apathetic to, but develops a following afterward. The opposite would be condemned by history. And then you also have critical dissonance, a slightly more fascinating topic showing the differences between audiences and critical expectations. And Nathan includes the links to the TV Tropes pages for both of these. He closes it out with, be careful reading TV Tropes and good luck on the next episode. Well, here we are on the next episode, so thanks for the luck, Nathan.
Yep, I've bagged up my luck and I am sifting through it, and then I'm going to make it into luck oatmeal later.
Oh, I don't know if it's luck oatmeal season, but you do you, Josh. You do you.
Yep, I'm a simp for oatmeal. What can I say?
Wow. Well, if we ever make T-shirts, that's not going to go on the T-shirt.
Nope. I was like, I'm pretty sure our conventional oven jokes are above the my randomly bringing up oatmeal in an episode.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Luck oatmeal, you mean?
Yeah.
And then you rub the luck off on you.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's talk very briefly about Striking Distance before we dive into spoilers.
Yeah. So Striking Distance is a baseball-based movie. Mm-hmm. Where
with Bruce snakes Willis, and submarines.
Yeah, featuring snakes and submarines from last week's episode. No. Yeah. Go ahead, sorry. I just had to say that bit. It wasn't even a worthwhile bit, but it had to be said. Well, my brain demanded it.
Somebody's got to inject humor into this conversation. So the basic premise of this movie is around a cop trying to solve a murder. And there's a handful of plot lines and mysteries that kind of go through it. And Bruce Willis is a disgraced cop who has to live out his days as a river patrolman until he can solve the mystery of the murderer. I found this an entertaining action movie from the sense of nothing really made sense. And I was constantly going, I don't think anyone would act like this. This is not at all how anyone would act, but it was still kind of fun to watch. And I thought that the characters played were all kind of fun to witness for a while. And it was a little over an hour and a half. So I thought that was an interesting time to spend with them. What about you?
Yeah, I'd agree with all that. I think, this movie was pretty critically panned at the time because I think that there was a lot of just generic action hero movies. And as much as I make fun of generic action hero movies, I think that if this movie didn't have like the little mystery plot and it was just a straight up action movie, I probably wouldn't like it as much. And I could definitely see why audiences at the time were kind of fatigued with movies like that. But I have not been going on like a 90s podcast where I watch every single movie from the 90s. I'm just going on a Bruce Willis journey. And as a part of this Bruce Willis journey, I thought it was a good watch. It wasn't like amazing by any means. There's so many plot holes in it. So if you're going into a movie to think about it, might want to not do that for this movie. Mm-hmm. And all of the character interactions I thought were decent. Like everything just felt like it was fine or good. There's even one scene of greatness, but we'll get into that later because it is a spoiler. But yeah, I thought it was pretty serviceable. I didn't have too many big complaints about it at all.
Yeah, and one of the major plot points that kind of kicks the movie off is a story of a police brutality case, and a police officer has to go to court because of how he acted, and Bruce Willis's character, also a cop, testifies against him, and
probably the most unrealistic element of this movie.
That's why he spends most of the story kind of in disgrace, is because a lot of the police force hates him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of weird watching that, you know, with the trial that's going on in Minneapolis right now, and other like pop things that are happening in the news. You're kind of in that moment, but mm-hmm. I don't think there is any real speaking role that's not a cop in this movie. It feels very insular, and everybody involved is either a cop or somehow like police adjacent.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a very, like, even the you're never really interacted. There's not a press, there's not reporters that they have to deal with. It is very, it's just cops after cops after cops, and it is a very strange story coming from our time now where it's so much in the news to talk about this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I found it very fascinating, but it was interesting that, yeah, it was unrealistic in the sense of the police officers would not have testified against each other, but also weird that 30 years ago, this was a story that people felt like they could talk about, and no one, I don't think anyone batted an eye. No review did I read talked about police brutality at all in the review, so...
Yeah, which is interesting, because wasn't this right about the time of Rodney King?
It was a couple years after it, yeah. Not long after it, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, we definitely, as a society, have a tendency to move on pretty quick about pretty horrible stuff, because there's always horrible stuff happening. So, I wonder if it was kind of in the minds of the people that wrote it, but then it wasn't really ever talked about afterwards. I, for one, feel like we didn't get to know that cop character that jumped off the bridge towards the beginning of the movie well enough. And I kind of, not that I enjoy seeing police brutality, obviously, but I feel like showing a little bit of that character beforehand would have done a lot for this movie. So I don't know. I felt that. I also was kind of surprised while watching it that the movie is obviously dated in some ways, but the police stuff and kind of the way that they talk about cops and stuff like that, I felt was actually pretty good. I would say I was expecting it to be a lot worse once I figured out it was like a very cop-centered movie, but I thought that it offered some decent sort of commentary on what was going on within the universe of the movie.
Yeah, that's I agree. That's what I'm saying, is like, because of the fact that everyone is a cop, it doesn't celebrate cops as cop movies often can, where they're, you know, the one saving the day against the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
But it also doesn't really take a look at the police force. And on top of that, the action was pretty silly at times with the way the police acted. It was a kind of a, I don't know if refreshing is the right word, but it was a nice change of scenery to go back to a out and out Bruce Willis action movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little comedy. Bruce Willis, I don't think, cracks it. Not even like a one-liner joke like he does in Die Hard.
He does crack a one-liner when he's looking into that boat.
Bit about his diver partner that he keeps telling him to stand at the back of the boat, and
yeah, but he says something about like land shark when he like jumps onto the boat. Yeah,
yeah. I don't know if I'd call that a joke or not.
Yeah, not a super jokey movie.
Yeah, but I found that kind of like, and it was an interesting change. I wish there was. We should come up with a scientific way to plot Bruce Willis's characters over time. Because he goes from quirky to angry and funny to just kind of disgruntled.
You know the like very consistent thing about all those characters, though?
What's that, Josh?
Like almost all of them have some sort of substance abuse problems.
Oh, yeah.
Like, good point. I was watching this movie and I was going, how many other movies have you seen Bruce Willis be an alcoholic in? Like so many of them.
I think that's a common trope, though, where you have the guy who's kind of depressed and living on his own to be an alcoholic. it is brought up that he's an alcoholic, but rarely are we seeing him lost control, inebriated, as much as you would think. Like, we're seeing him hungover, we're seeing him kind of suffer at work, performance-wise, because of off-screen incidents, but we're not seeing him, like, show up to work drunk or anything like that, so...
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about before we dive into spoilers?
No, I think we can, you know, dive into spoilers and get along swimmingly with the rest of this episode.
Swimmingly. I like it.
Yep.
Dead body in the water. We fished it out. Victim's name is Cheryl Putnam. The body was dumped upriver late last night. Whoever killed her hung on to her for a while before he mailed it.
How do you know?
I used to be a homicide detective.
Detective Thomas Hardy.
Tom Hardy? You're famous, man.
Infamous. Was once the most decorated officer on the Pittsburgh Police Force.
But you're a talented guy. You can be anything you want to be.
I like my life just the way it is, Bob.
Until he broke rank.
Loyalty above all else, except honor.
And told the truth.
It was a Pittsburgh cop that killed these girls. Just ask these guys.
Now.
I got you this job after they took your shield.
River Rescue 9221. This is base. Hardy, please come in.
921, go ahead.
He's got a new assignment.
And Shark.
A new partner.
Hi, it's nice to meet you.
I never had a woman partner before.
Neither have I.
And a river full of dead bodies.
We're in pursuit of a murder suspect who may be armed and dangerous.
This is not your case, you understand me?
Everybody's on a murder here!
They should have never put him in the water if they didn't want him to make waves.
How many men upstairs? Let me rephrase that.
Officer Hardy was not out of control and dangerous.
Put the bodies in the river so I'll find them, Nick. He wants me to find these girls.
Bruce Willis.
You just won't let go, will you?
Hardy, behind you!
Sarah Jessica Parker.
Thank you.
No, I should definitely be thanking you.
You know, I just thought of a way that I could probably thank you.
Boy, you gotta be so careful in this life, Danny. Very careful.
Striking distance.
That audio was from the trailer of Striking Distance. I am going to read the description from IMDb. Coming from a police family, Tom Hardy, played by Bruce Willis, ends up fighting his uncle after the murder of his father. Tom believes the killer is another cop and goes on the record with his allegations. Demoted then to river duty, the killer taunts Tom. We picked a real tongue twister of a description here for this movie. You can find this movie streaming for rent on VOD, and from here we will be spoiling the movie. So, Josh, I want to talk first about the action set pieces in this movie, because I found them a joy to watch, but utterly disbelieving.
And yeah.
So I'll start with the opening car chase, which was a bananas car chase of like 16, 17 police cars through the streets of Pittsburgh, which this movie is set in. I don't know if it was filmed there, but it was set in the streets of Pittsburgh. And one of them crashes and explodes, so that was probably a cop who died. And then they just keep going, and then they surround this car, and no one can see through the glass into who's driving the car, of course, because for plot reasons. And then the car escapes the roadblocks, heads down this ridiculous hill with these boost ramps on them somehow that everybody just catches air every, like, 3 seconds, and it is... one of the funniest car chase scenes I've ever seen, because it's just a line of cars heading down this big hill, and they'll just, like, in unison,
boom,
be catching air every hill over and over and over again. And it's shown in the trailer, that scene. And it was just so silly. And I'm like, what on earth? And then that ends up in a wreck, and that's where the killer gets away after Tom Hardy's dad dies. And I was thinking to myself this whole time, why is there no helicopter? Every police chase has a helicopter that's following them. This has been a long-running police chase, so there's no need for... Like, it wasn't as if the police chase had only been going on 30 seconds and they couldn't get a helicopter there fast enough. It was quite a while that they've been chasing this guy, and no helicopter. And that helicopter would have just made the whole thing so much easier.
The helicopter guys were at lunch, so... Sorry, Kendrick, yeah, doesn't matter if there's a chase going on.
Man,
we're on lunch.
That is silly, Josh. Silly.
Yeah, they actually explain why there's no helicopters in a deleted scene.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding.
I knew you were kidding, but our audience probably didn't, because they don't know you like I do.
Yeah, that's true. Even though my brother listens to this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nothing.
Yeah, he doesn't know you're kidding, though. But yeah, so like I said, the action, silly, but still kind of fun to watch. I was just like, this does not make any sense. This is not... First of all, I don't think cops would have driven that recklessly, and people were dying, and they came very close to hitting people.
Yep.
It's very... extremely dangerous driving through the streets.
Yeah, they drove like against traffic on the freeway or on a highway for like a little bit. You're like, oh my god.
Yeah, the camera's like mounted to the front of the car, and it has this very intense, scary feel of you, the viewer, are going to hit a car.
Yeah. I thought that even though those scenes were ridiculous, that they were filmed pretty well, though. Like, I was definitely invested in it and everything, and I was like, well, this is very silly. They also did like the classic guns in movies thing, where every time it showed a cop with a gun, you hear like a gun cocking every single time it showed a new shot of a cop just walking around cocking their guns over and over again.
This movie has a lot of their small revolvers just shooting from a long distance away, hoping to do something.
Yep.
Like unloading a lot of bullets into a car that's, you know, quite a few feet away.
Yep. And I loved every minute of it. I ate
Did
it
you,
up.
Though?
Most minutes of this movie I loved.
So after that opening action scene, there's not only a few other major action scene moments. There's one in the middle that is after Bruce Willis has been kind of demoted to river duty. He sees a barge that for unexplained reasons is being robbed by cocaine thieves or thieves with cocaine, something to do with cocaine and thieves.
River pirates, and Kendrick.
River
pirates.
Oh, sorry. River pirates. And it's kind of a neat scene where we see Bruce Willis as he like uses his skills and smarts to outwit this barge full of river pirates.
Yeah.
And
a barge of baddies, if you will.
I thought it was like a fun way to show kind of an interesting bit, and I was really hoping something we would have learned there would have paid off later.
Mm-hmm.
There, for example, when Bruce Willis jumps onto the boat, he pulls the shells out of his shotgun and holds them in his mouth to keep him from getting wet while he kind of wades up to the boat, and then he puts them in the gun and keeps on going. And I thought that was kind of cool, and I expected later there to be a bit about someone whose gun gets wet and something about how getting guns wet makes them kind of unusable, but no, never brought up again. Or the robbers never brought up again. The cocaine incident never brought up again.
Yeah.
I was kind of disappointed in that, but another like fun scene to watch, and it was fun to see him kind of roaming around this barge as it heads down the river. And
yeah. I also love the fact that he only has two shots. So you spend this entire time knowing how many bad guys there are, and the fact that he only has two shots in his shotgun, you're like, how's he going to get out of this? So I thought that that sequence was very fun.
And then I think the only other really big action scene is one at the end, right?
No, there's one where they chase after what they think is a guy that dumped a dead body, but it's actually just a carpet
that got dumped in the river. Okay, yeah. So I want to talk about that one for a minute. So there's a scene where they witness what appears to be a body dumping in the road, in the river, excuse me, and they chase after him. And again, Bruce Willis, from a distance, shoots with his gun. Nothing happens. And then he shoots it with a flare gun.
Yeah.
And the car explodes.
Yep.
And I was like, oh my God, they just killed that man. But apparently he escaped somehow. Yep. I think they're not explicit about it, but they're just like, you destroyed his car and he escaped. But he must have just been dumping a rug. Like, what? Yeah. So bizarre.
Yeah. I also, like, I get that there's issues with this, but generally if a cop tells me to stop and I was just doing something illegal, I'm likely to stop. So the fact that the guy kept running away, as I was like, well, but does it make sense that it would be just like a random litter person? Like somebody just throwing away garbage? And why would they dump a rug? That makes no sense either. So
Yeah. We know now at the end that it was kind of a way to frame the Tom Hardy character into acting the way he did so that the cops can make fun of him.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seemed very silly at the time. Like, if anyone spent any time thinking about this, they would go, this is all weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, wait a second. You know, I think that this Tom Hardy asshole might know something about this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Every single cop is like, yep, know the day at the office. Like, this stuff happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Final action scene, which I thought was fine. It didn't have any major excitements. I mean, there's like the classic reveals and surprise characters show up, but as far as the action goes, I found it so-so.
Most exciting thing about the action at the end was that they refused to kill off this character, even though they should have died like 16 times.
Yeah, you're talking about the villain character?
Yeah, the villain. Because like, I wrote down a list of things that happened to this character. They get in a car crash, no problem. They fall off a bridge, no problem. Get shot, no problem. Car crash again, forgot about that one, no problem. Train, no problem. Jump off a bridge again, no problem. Drowning, no problem. Tased in the mouth, problem. So it's like, this character survived so much stuff.
Did he die at the end, or did he just get tased? Like, did that kill him? Do we know?
I think that you are supposed to believe that that killed him. I guess maybe because it's in the water, that's what happened. But I'm not like a water.
That made me so mad. Like I mentioned earlier, there's the whole bit where he has to take the shells out of his gun so they don't get wet. But then the taser works fine after countless amount of time underwater.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, this is not how this, like, those batteries would be destroyed. The whole thing would be ruined.
Yep.
Why do we need this? Yep. Why can't you just punch him?
Yep.
So yeah. Silly. So silly. So that the action, for the most part, fun, but a little hard to really swallow, but still fun.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the plot of this movie. So you're supposed to be hinted to from the very beginning that the villain is the brother of the cop who was on trial. I don't remember his name. They all have kind of generic.
Oh, I thought Irish it started with a D. Names.
Danny? Yeah, Danny.
Yeah.
Played by Tom Sizemore, so we have, just to remind you of the characters, we have Tom Hardy, played by Bruce Willis. There is Jimmy, who was Tom Hardy's partner, but then was on trial. And in the beginning of the movie, we see him jump off a bridge in what we believe to be him committing suicide. And then you have Danny, his brother, and Nick, the father of both Danny and Jimmy, also a cop. I didn't look up to see if this is true, but I feel like there's got to be some nepotism regulations or something around just your dad running the police department and you just reporting to him. Like, that can't be legal, can it?
I don't know. I'm not in charge of cop laws, so.
Oh, cop laws. Well, we should, if you know, listener, you should send us an email, williswaypod@gmail.com. So what I was saying was the movie definitely telegraphs the suspicion of Danny from the beginning. The way the camera kind of lingers on him and the way he kind of like looks at Bruce Willis. And then the biggest giveaway is he leaves, goes to California, and the killings stop. And then he comes back, and the killings start up again. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, it's this guy. But anybody who's read, like, the oldest of Hardy Boy books would know that that's not how any mystery works. So it just felt like the cheapest of fakes.
Yeah. I think that you were also supposed to believe that it might have been the uncle, Nick, because he's just acting really shady about a lot of stuff.
Tommy and, or Danny and.
Yeah.
Jimmy. Man, these names are going to be the end of me. But,
yeah.
At the beginning, he's with them.
In the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, he's with them. Also, yeah, I mean, I don't know. This plot. Don't think about it too much. It definitely felt like, I don't know how much pulpy fiction or pulpy mystery novels you've read.
Like zero.
Like the airport paperbacks you might find, those kind of deals. This definitely had that feeling. Which I think that's kind of what I was expecting when I went into it. So that's why I was like, oh, you know, says that on the tin. That is what it is.
Yeah. I think that if you turn off your brain, you're going to have a lot more fun with this movie than if you try to think about it too hard. Yeah. What were we talking about with the Dannys and the Nicks and the Tommies and the Jimmies?
Oh. So there is this misdirect back and forth.
Oh, yes.
But I felt like the movie thought that it was pulling one over on the audience. And I am curious what percentage of the audience actually bought the misdirect. I was actually starting to believe the misdirect only because there was like so little else going on plot wise. I was like, the theater only have 5 minutes left. What else can they do? And then they pulled out the guy you thought was dead didn't really die.
Yeah. Hard. I watched an interview with Siskel and Ebert talking about this movie. And they both said that the end of the movie kind of cheats. And I was like, yeah, I guess I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very silly.
When Jimmy attempts suicide at the beginning of the movie and he jumps off the bridge into the river, I immediately was like, that bridge is not very high. And I don't know what kind of river that is. But I feel like someone should be getting down there to see if he's still alive.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's not Golden Gate Bridge territory where you're that high up. Like, it was kind of a low bridge. Because I think it's the same bridge they jump off at the end of the movie.
Oh, is it?
It's kind of hard to tell. It's dark both times. But it looked like a similar bridge and about similar height.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that you're supposed to believe that he died just because that's where their mom jumped off.
She never turned up again?
Yeah. But maybe she's off living her best life somewhere else.
Yeah, right. We should look into other murders in the area. Maybe she's off committing those.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so then Jimmy jumps off the edge, and then they, like, flash forward to 2 years later, and Bruce Willis is, like, an alcoholic that we only get a reference that he's an alcoholic. We don't really see a whole lot of alcoholism on screen. And then he's told that he has like a new brand new partner after his old partner is just like some guy that Bruce Willis is not a fan of and makes him fly off the end of his boat. And when they introduce Sarah Jessica Parker as his new partner, aka Sarah Jessica Partner, Bruce Willis is just the entire time like, a woman. Yes, I respect, women. That's me. And he has like this super creepy, like, whisper in the ear of the guy who's being like, all right, this is your new partner. And then that guy's like, no. And then Bruce Willis goes like, eh, and just walks away. And then Sarah Jessica Parker's like, what did he ask you? And he's like, I can't tell you that. And you're like, what the fuck just happened?
It was a very awkward scene. And I don't think there's any way to know what he said officially. Like, I didn't check the captioning, but
yeah,
my guess is like, is this a joke or is this real or is she actually a cop or something like that? But it was very strange. And then for her to ask and be told no, I was just like, that just made it weirder. What was
the point of this? Yeah.
Yeah. It just made it weirder. And then he treats her with like a begrudging respect, but not like complete disdain.
Yeah. But he also, like, when he's looking at her diving suit, he's like, oh, it's got boobas holes in them or like whatever. Yeah. Like, he's like, oh, wow, she's got breasts, you know, like a real woman character. And then they kind of throw that to the side. Yeah, it's very,
very weird.
So strange.
It's like someone who had never, like, actually in real life ogled or catcalled a woman was, like, trying to sit down and write. They would be like, okay, so you would say, oh, a woman cop. Like, that's the worst you could do. And you're like, this feels weird, like it's supposed to be bad, but just awkward. And Sarah Jessica Parker's character is just like, I'm just going to move right on. And we're just like, what? This is very strange.
Yeah, that was so weird.
Have you ever seen the movie Hocus Pocus, Josh?
I have not, as Otis.
That's probably my favorite Sarah Jessica Parker role. I was not a big Sex and the City viewer, but Hocus Pocus, great movie. Great Halloween movie. That came out just a few months prior to this movie. very different role, obviously. She plays one of three witches who come to antagonize a town at Halloween time.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was interesting that she had two major movie releases just a few months apart from each other. And she had actually been in quite a few things before this. I was looking through her IMDb career to see kind of how long she had been an actor before this was released. And it looked like she had been doing stuff for quite a while, including several TV runs on different TV shows and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I'm looking her up on Letterboxd, and this is the first movie that I've seen her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did you watch Sex and the City or any of her other stuff?
Nope. I have not seen her in anything. Oh, I think I started Footloose, but you know what I'm going to say?
Fell asleep. I am impressed you haven't fallen asleep in any Bruce Willis movies.
Well, then I would have to watch it over again. So.
The commitment to your craft.
Yep, exactly. And the only one of these that I've watched over again is Hudson Hawk so far.
A very throwaway line, but at one point she just, like, talks to another police officer and says, like, thanks, Dutch. And I was remembering our rule of screenwriting is
Dutch
characters
bad.
Named Dutch are always bad guys. And I was like, oh, man, is he the killer? But no, he's not. I was just like, whoa, pause, there's Dutch.
Oh, man. Kendrick's become, like, a little bit hardened to the idea of a Dutch good guy.
Yeah, hey, we have, you know, a nice Dutch so far, so that's good. Glad to see it can happen.
Yeah. It does exist out there in the wild. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of whole stuff in this that I was like, just along for the ride. You haven't watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine, have you?
I've watched a handful of episodes. I recognize the... He's not a police chief, but he's like head of internal affairs in this movie.
Yeah. And Andre Brar. Yeah, he's in this, and he's like a baby compared to...
I know. His he was like the youngest of man, and I was like, wait, is that guy from Brooklyn Nine-Nine? And then I like got on and I was like, oh, yes, it was.
Yeah. Yeah. I was very excited to see him in this. Did you catch the super meta moment that happened in this movie where they talked about the name Sarah?
No.
Oh, so at one point, so I guess we haven't dove into this yet, but the Sarah Jessica Parker's character and Bruce Willis's character are like, oh yeah, we're not going to have sex or whatever. And then they go to a party and then they come back from the party and then they have sex. Because that's
classic,
this sort of movie. I little side note about that, but did you know that they apparently refilmed all of the sex scenes in this movie? Those are all reshoots.
I did read that on the trivia, but I didn't know why. Was it to make it sexier?
I think that that was what was going on. And also in the trailer, you could see, like, around some intimacy scene, Bruce Willis is like, thank you. Or, yeah, he's like, thank you again. And then she's like, I should be thanking you. And he's like, I know of a way to say that or whatever. Yeah. So I wonder if, like, that was originally a lot more jokey, which would not have fit the tone of this movie at all.
No, it wouldn't.
So, yeah, I was confused about that. But anyways, all that to say, while they're, once they're done with one of their little sex scenes, she's like, oh, I haven't told you this, but I have a secret about me. I was married before, and I have a daughter. And then Bruce Willis is like, what's your daughter's name? And she's like, Sarah. And then Bruce Willis is like, that's a nice name. Which I just loved that.
Because the actress's name is Sarah?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, that totally went over my head. I was just like, why does Bruce Willis care about this? Like, what is the point of this bit? I had totally forgotten until the end. Another screenwriting foible I think this movie had was the opening car chase has Bruce Willis and his dad riding through on a cop car chasing the killer. Mm-hmm. The dad was played by John Mahoney of Frasier fame, and he tells Bruce Willis, like, you need to get married I can have grandkids or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then totally forgot that until the end of the movie when he's there with Sarah Jessica Parker's character and their daughter, and he's like, see, dad, grandkids.
Yeah.
And I'm like, did he adopt her? What? This isn't what. So he's dating a woman with a kid and he thinks that counts?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully that's a they've already had their relationship pretty well established before you're like, and this is my kid in front of said kid and
yeah,
their mom. So yeah.
You don't think he introduced himself at the graveyard being like, we're going to go talk to my dad's gravestone and hello, nice to meet you.
Yeah. IDK. I also, while watching this movie, was reminded of, like, I had several friends back in college that would say, like, oh, yeah, and then I had to ask for, like, different shifts at my job because I slept with, like, one of my coworkers and just didn't really work out or whatever. Or they, like, quit a job after that sort of a thing. And I'm just like, I do not get people who have sex with their coworkers at all. Like, oh yeah, let me put all of my eggs in a one basket. But then, like, especially people that have sex with their partner, like, in a place where you have to work with that person, that's what your job is. I do not get it. I don't understand it. That sort of decision making is so not along the lines of anything that I would choose to do. So it's just so surprising to me whenever that happens in a movie, and you're like, no, why?
And interestingly enough, they even bring it up when, I think right before or right around the time they're going to have sex, they're like, we can't do this. We're partners. And they're like, oh, well, we should stop being partners. You should shoot me. And he's like, no, it would hurt too much or something like that.
Oh, yeah. And then they go, we should shoot each other. And then he's like, too much paperwork.
Yeah. kind of a funny moment. Yeah. But, yeah, you're right. It would be very uncomfortable. And I guess we're not really given a lot of closure in this movie at the mm-hmm. end. He punches the one cop who's kind of an asshole to him the whole time after he comes up and is like, I guess I was wrong after all. Police can make mistakes. Do you want to hit me? And Bruce Willis goes like, nah. And then he hits him anyways.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, well, cool. That's fun. So that was a little cathartic, I guess. But we're not told, does he get his old job back? What happens to... Does no one question Sarah Jessica Parker's testimony when we find out she was secretly just investigating him for internal affairs work? Plot is...
That does bring up the biggest plot hole, though, in the movie.
Which is?
Sarah Jessica Parker's character is under a different identity, working specifically as a diver for the Coast Guard. How did she go get the training to be a diver, like a certified diver for the Coast Guard, without anybody realizing, oh, this is actually somebody that's like an investigator of the internal affairs? How did she go get the certification?
So they're not the Coast Guard. They're like... Okay. Actual just police officers who work on the river, I thought was kind of cool. And I was curious if Portland had anything like that, because it looked like kind of a cool gig. You get to ride boats and hang out on the river and do stuff on boats. That all seems like fun. Fight river pirates. Yeah. Like, it's a win-win-win.
Who doesn't presumably... love some river pirate action?
Yeah, exactly. Presumably, the Sarah Jessica Parker's character Joe/Emily, we're not told this, but I can assume that she had dive training already and she worked for the Internal Affairs Department or got transferred in, and they just said, okay, you're gonna be a diver. I was fascinated by this concept of like partner teams, one of which was a diver and the other one was the not diver, boat driver. They don't. Mm-hmm. They're never given a title, but mm-hmm. I expected there to be a whole lot more diving. But there's only one scene where she has to put her wetsuit on and get in the water,
and then she just like doggy paddles over there. She doesn't have to dive for anything.
No, she could have dived under that barge and like cut a hole in or something.
You know, I don't think that this is that type of movie. Sadly,
mm.
I mean that type of movie. I mean, have that big of a budget.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
Yeah. There's also a jump scare, and I just do not like jump scares at all. So the moment that it happened, I was like, duh, why?
Jump scare you're referring to is the nurse.
No, later when Joe gets tased.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess that was a jump scare. You know something bad's going to happen, but you're not known when, how exactly it's going to happen. But,
yep.
Good point.
Yeah. We also haven't talked about my favorite scene in the whole movie, which is like, it's revealed who the big bad guy is, that it's been the guy that supposedly has been dead this whole time. And Bruce Willis and his cousin, what did we say, Danny? Was that his name?
Bruce Willis's cousin, or I think it was Danny. He was the killer's brother.
Yeah. Yeah. So Danny, Joe, and Tommy are all tied up and in chairs, and then in busts their uncle Nick, and then there's like a fight that breaks out and Nick gets shot, and then Bruce Willis and Danny are both still tied up and in chairs, and then they have to fight Jimmy, who's not in a chair tied up, but it's a 2-versus-1 battle where two people are still hands behind their back attached to the chair arms. And I loved that sequence. I was all over watching that. I think I really like a fight scene where there's some sort of crazy disadvantage that somebody has to overcome. Mm-hmm. Like Bruce Willis earlier, when he only had the 2 shotgun shots mm-hmm. or the 2 shotgun shells, and he has to take back the boat, and all the bad guys have guns and he's only got 1 gun with 2 bullets in it. Yeah. I liked that a lot. And I love that end chair sequence. I thought that it was really tense and just a really well-paced, well-shot action scene.
Yeah, it was a fun scene. And I liked how he had to jump out the window while being tied to the chair.
Yeah.
And the killer doesn't, like, go out the door to follow him. He also climbs out the window.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, this is silly, but it was fun. And then he had to do the rest of the fight, the whole fight, while being handcuffed, which made it an interesting, good call out there.
It was fun. I like that. Right. One last thing that I forgot to mention. The shorts that Bruce Willis wears through a lot of this movie, because he's part of, like, the water police force or whatever. Amazing. I love seeing Bruce Willis run around in shorts, be a serious action hero star. It's the best. If more movies were like this, that would be all the better.
Yeah. It really, like, brings the question of, why aren't more action movies heroes in shorts? It's so much more comfortable. Plus, they usually have nice legs.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, who doesn't want to see Bruce Willis's legs while he fights bad guys?
Yeah, I love shorts. I'm wearing shorts right now.
Hey, right on. Yeah, that was all the other stuff that I had to say about the movie.
All right. Well, we should normally talk about what clothes we're wearing while we're doing this podcast.
Yeah.
And with that, let's move on to the Star Trek connection. Josh, you have a few Star Trek connections for us.
Yeah, so I do have a couple of Star Trek connections. The first one is Michael Canavan. He played the character named Cousin Gary. So just to remind you, we have now Gary, Tommy, Nikki, Danny, Jimmy. Am I missing any of them?
The dad character, whose
dad
name I don't remember. Dad. His name's Dad.
His name's Dad. Good. Yeah. Michael Canavan played Gary. And he has been in Star Trek 3 different times. He was in Deep Space Nine on an episode called Defiant, and he played a human named Tamal. He was in Voyager in an episode called Unforgettable, and he played a Ramuran. Yeah, if I pronounced that wrong, please send in a correction. Named Kernith. And then in Enterprise, he played a character in First Flight. That was a Vulcan advisor. It didn't have any lines, so it wasn't a named character, just Vulcan advisor. Mm. So yeah, that's the first one. Apparently, little side note about this guy, when I was looking him up on Memory Alpha, apparently he met his now wife on the set of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. They were shooting an episode together, and he was like, wow, this person's cute. And then they started dating, and then eventually got married. So that's adorable. Aww. I know. And then the other person is Juliana McCarthy, and she played the judge in this movie, and she was in several episodes of Deep Space Nine. She played a Cardassian named Mila, who is a housekeeper for a character that gets introduced a few seasons in, named Inabrin Tane. So,
nice. Yeah. That's a good, that's like some good quality Star Trek connections right there.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't, we weren't having to reach for our oboe or call the stunts or anything in order to make it happen. Nope.
Yeah, we didn't have to use our stunts or our oboists.
Yep. Or have to muse about what first man might be or opening man or whatever in Death Becomes Her.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. Who is opening man?
The background actor did not, we didn't need to figure out who the character was.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, another trivia piece that I wanted to talk about was just the troubled production on this movie. Apparently, this movie had a lot of problems while shooting it. And one of the production members said that Bruce Willis called the shots like he did on Hudson Hawk and like he used to do on Moonlighting. He had scenes rewritten. He did what he wanted to do. We were working with Orson Willis, which is a reference to, obviously, Orson Welles, who was pretty adamant about the way that he wanted to work in movies as well. And so
Orson
apparently...
Willis, I love that.
Yeah, I do too. I was like, this guy needs to be a comedian, not a production person. but yeah, anyways, the movie had like an original cut that was shown, and test audiences just absolutely hated it. So they did just a ton of reshooting in Los Angeles. So apparently some of the scenes are filmed in LA and then some were filmed in Philadelphia. And the Philadelphia. Yeah, right?
Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so, like, the Philadelphia of Pittsburgh?
I don't know. Everything on the East Coast just blends into one in my mind. Like,
wow.
Yeah. Like, there's
Way
New York.
Coastist.
There's New York, there's Florida, there's Maine, and then everything else is New England. I cannot be bothered to learn which one's which.
Between the Rocky Mountains and the Atlantic Ocean is just New England.
No, there's New England. There's first red states, swamps, and then New England.
Oh, okay.
That's how I keep things separated in my mind.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So the release date got pushed back from May to September. And according to some critics and reports of the time, test audiences disliked the initial cut of the film largely because they found parts of it confusing. Those parts were added into director Roddy Harrington's and Marty Kaplan's original script by star Willis. One source claimed that the original cut was like Hudson Hawk without the laughs, which is brutal because Hudson Hawk is mostly laughs. So,
huh? Is he referencing? I saw this line and I was curious what your perspective of it was. He talking about Hudson Hawk being kind of confusing and disjointed, but had the laugh. So he was saying this movie was similarly confusing and disjointed. Was that what he was going for?
Maybe. I also know that Hudson Hawk is one of those movies that has been vindicated by history. Thank you, Nathan, for that little TV trope for a tool for me. But
nice.
Yeah, I think that it's one of those movies where at the time it was just horribly panned. And now it's kind of developed a little bit more of an acceptance as being a pretty fun movie. So I'm wondering if they're like just trying to reach bottom of the barrel to insult Bruce Willis without having to go for a cheap shot like Bonfire of the Vanities. With that, that's kind of what I was interpreting the line as, but I don't know. Somebody might have just said it just offhandedly and they're like, ha ha, Hudson Hawk bad, and then that got turned into the quote.
I see.
IDK though.
I see. One thing I forgot to mention earlier, but I found fascinating was the other stuff Roddy Harrington had done.
Mm-hmm.
So he's famous for a whole lot of movies, writing and directing, but he also had worked on a few episodes of Tales from the Crypt.
Oh.
Which I only bring up because Robert Zemeckis also having worked on Tales from the Crypt, and it was a similarity with Death Becomes Her, the last movie we discussed. and I found it kind of fascinating. I don't know that much about Tales from the Crypt. I've watched a few episodes, but I'm not a diehard Tales of the Crypt fan, a crypta fan, as they call themselves. And I was just kind of like, whoa, do we need to start a Tales of the Crypt connection here?
Yeah.
Do you have any experience with Tales of the Crypt?
No, I don't. I'm also equally baffled whenever I see Tales of the Crypt get brought up, and then I'm like, okay, all right. I guess a lot of people have seen this or been involved in it.
I like some horror films, but I'm not usually a big campy horror guy. I didn't read Goosebumps. That stuff is never really my jam. So, although I did like Death Becomes Her a whole lot more than you did. So
yeah.
Maybe I should go back and watch Tales of the Crypt.
Yeah, you might find a lot of stuff that you really like in it. I'm not sure that I would necessarily, because I also do not like horror. So,
Yep. Okay, let's talk about how much money this movie made. So, this movie, I had a fairly well put together cast. You know, Bruce Willis and Sarah Jessica Parker and all the various Tommies and Nicks and Donnies and Dannys and Jimmys.
Mm-hmm.
Altogether, the budget was fairly high on this movie, and then so just from the get go, and then there was all the reshoots that you just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie must have cost quite a bit.
It did cost, I think, more than what the studio was hoping for. It ended up costing $30 million to do everything when all was said and done. Which, like, if I was to throw it in comparison to, like, the other stuff that we've watched, that would be kind of right in between Look Who's Talking To and Die Hard. So, like, within the realm of other things that Bruce Willis has done before.
Mm.
And the domestic gross for this movie was only $24 million. So, as we've covered before, the domestic gross is really what movie studios are looking at a lot of the time. So it's kind of deemed like a financial failure within the States, although it apparently did pretty good overseas, and it went on to gross $77 million in total. So it came out above, $47 million above.
Gotcha.
But
yeah,
the studio was still just disappointed in it.
Yeah. I am curious because those other movies you listed, you can kind of see the budget on the screen usually.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the opening scene in this movie where there's the, you know, 100 police cars flying down the hill with parts flying off of them and cars blowing up right and left, and then a few scenes on the river, I don't feel like this movie's budget is that visible.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if it's just bogged down in paying the actors.
Yeah, I would guess paying the actors and in the reshoots, because, like we had said, they reshot all of the intimacy scenes, and apparently the movie was originally shot in Pittsburgh, so my thought is that maybe they had to, like, reconstruct the set or something.
I see.
And if you're trying to, like, get it to be exact enough to be able to film on it, I would imagine that would be kind of costly. But I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you have to pay like a whole production crew to come out there and stuff like that. It's not like just doing little pickup shots that you can do pretty quick and get it over with. But it's like reshoots of whole scenes. And then it's basically like just re-entering into production, except for you got to do it fast. So I'm guessing that if there's like any sort of, oh, we can either do this and pay a little bit more and have it done on time, or do that and pay a little bit less, but it'll be done too late, they have to choose the first one. So I'm thinking that movies that are shot mostly in reshoots probably just exponentially drive up the budget, because you can't plan out everything as well if you're doing that.
Yeah, totally. That's what I was thinking. It seems like a fairly common thing in these Bruce Willis movies that they have to do a lot of reshoots based on test audience and the how the plot and stories are set up. So I'm curious if we see that going forward or not. I don't know how common that was in the early 90s, but
I don't know. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I would be very curious to know how much worse the original cut of this movie was, but I think that what they ended up with was pretty comprehensible, so I'm proud of them for that. One other thing that we haven't mentioned yet is that because this movie originally has like a flash forward for 2 years, it starts out taking place in 1991, which, as we've covered before, was the year of the Willis. So that was a fun little moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of the man himself, let's talk about Bruce Willis's character in this movie. So this is definitely Bruce Willis is the star of the movie, compared to some of the movies we've talked about recently. Billy Bathgate comes to mind, or even really Death Becomes Her, where you don't go to the movie you're not watching the movie to see Bruce Willis. This movie, on the other hand, is definitely a Bruce Willis movie.
Yeah.
And like I mentioned earlier, I feel like it's a good return to the action movie setup that I think he's known for. This had a lot more moments where he could be the physical action star that I think he's going to become throughout the rest of this decade that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
As far as his performance, I thought he did an all right job as a police officer. I was kind of comparing it. I don't know if you thought about this, but I was comparing him to the John McClane cop that he plays in Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about they're both detectives and they're both kind of misunderstood detectives, and they're kind of having to solve mysteries on their own in both of those movies.
Mm-hmm.
But compared to Die Hard, both 1 and 2, he seems a whole lot... In Die Hard, he seems a whole lot more sure of himself, and he knows he's right, and he's willing to do whatever it takes to be right. In this movie, he's definitely still... He doesn't come off with that sureness of... That I think his character kind of needs. And that's probably more due to the writing, I think. I think if they had him be more of a John McClane type, don't play by the rules, because that's, I think, what we're supposed to believe his character is supposed to be. But I'm never really buying it. I just kind of think that he's happy on the lowest rung of the police ladder and doesn't really care about anything at all, much less trying to really solve the murder until the murders come back. Because he doesn't believe that the guy they have in jail is the murderer. And he says several times, oh, it's a cop, it's not this guy you have in jail. Which, by the way, they mention once that he's on death row. And usually death row inmates are on death row for a long time. So I'm assuming that the guy was able to get exonerated and released and all that. But I feel like that would have been a much different movie if he went to the prison and talked to that guy and was like, tell me your story. Like, what do you know? And then he's fighting for this guy who's on death row. That would have been a totally different story. But this, we're just kind of shown 2 years later, he's drunk on a boat or drunk on his riverfront house. And I didn't find the character quite as compelling as the John McClane cop in Die Hard. But what did you think?
I'd agree that it wasn't quite as compelling, but I thought that it worked fine enough for this movie. The movie doesn't need him to be as, in my opinion, it doesn't need him to be as a John McClane-y and like the over the top character that character is. I thought that the more subdued take was good, but that could also just be that maybe Bruce Willis was apathetic to the movie. I forgot to mention this, but apparently, even though he was calling a lot of the shots and a lot of the scenes that he called the shots for had to get thrown out, he was apparently super pissed to have to come back for reshoots. So I wonder if that might be part of it too, is that sometimes he's a little bit apathetic because he just did not want to be there at all. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I liked his performance well enough, I'd say.
I agree. Is this the first sex scene we've had that with Bruce Willis in a movie? Or am I missing one?
It's got to be, yeah, I think.
Yeah, I think it is. It's alluded to in several movies, but I cannot think of one.
Well, we could just cross out Look Who's Talking and Look Who's Talking 2 off the list right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's involved, but not really. All right, anything else you want to talk about Bruce Willis's performance in this movie?
Mm-mm. Nope.
Okay, how does this movie fit into our Bruce Willis lists? So every week, Josh and I rank the Bruce Willis movies. This is the 15th movie we've covered. Josh, where would you put this movie?
I am going to go crazy. And I want to preface this by saying that this movie is not amazing. This movie is fine.
Oh, boy.
But I'm going to put this movie at my number 4. Above above The Last Boy Scout and below In Country.
Whoa.
Yeah. I thought that for what this movie was, it did it all just fine, and I was happy with that. It didn't try to go bonkers and be amazing. It was just doing what it was gonna do. So yeah. I'm putting it at my number 4.
All right, well, Josh is putting this movie on his number 4 spot. I, on the other hand, am going to put it on my number 8 spot.
That's very respectable.
So, after Blind Date, before Mortal Thoughts, before we recorded this episode, I was trying to determine where I would rank this movie. And I was comparing it to Blind Date, and I was like, did I like Blind Date more or less than Striking Distance? And I think I liked Blind Date a little bit more. So I'm going to put Striking Distance right in the middle of my 15 movies at number 8.
Yeah. I totally get that. So did you like... Oh, you did like Billy Bathgate less. Okay, good. So I was like, for a second, thinking that you ranked Billy Bathgate above Striking Distance, and I was like, how?
Oh, no, I was wrong. No, unfortunately. As much as I enjoyed Dustin Hoffman and Billy Bathgate, that movie sunk down low.
Yep.
If you're interested in seeing our full lists, you can find them on Letterboxd, and our links are in the show notes. Josh, do you know what time it is?
It is just about dinner time, but that means that it's time to spin the Wheel of Willis.
The Wheel of Willis. Did you know that you could probably eat dinner off of a Wheel of Willis?
You can?
Do you have to? Yeah, it's like a cheese wheel. They bring it to your table.
Yes, I'd like the Willis wheel, please. My waiter looks at me like, what the hell is a Willis wheel?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, you're going to the wrong restaurants then, my friend.
Hey, that's it. And what do we say every time we spin the Wheel of Willis, Kendrick?
Every time we are legally mandated to say,
whisk that wheel! All right. Would this movie be better or worse if this Bruce Willis character was played by a silent actor and just had Bruce Willis be his inner voice, a la Look Who's Talking? Like, just imagine, like, Bruce Willis silently looking out over the water, being like, I was on a boat, never gotten wet before. Like, just talking about what he's literally doing.
I think if this movie were another adult, maybe like an adult that just doesn't talk or can't talk, but Bruce Willis was playing his inner monologue, that would have been, I think I would have enjoyed that movie.
Mm-hmm.
If this was a baby that was wandering around, like bumbling into solving crimes, maybe not.
Yeah, absolutely not if it was a baby. But I think that if it was like a noir type of movie, I think that that would actually work pretty well for this sort of a thing. It would never get made because you'd never cast Bruce Willis in a silent film and have it be marketed as like this big budget movie like this. So that just would never happen. But I think that if it did happen in that alternate world, I think I'd like that. Mm-hmm.
It could be like a Sin City prequel.
Yeah. I'm actually really excited to watch Sin City, by the way, because I've never seen them, but I've heard a lot of people talk about it, and I'm excited to see all the cool stuff that they do with colors in that movie.
I saw it when it first came out, I don't know, a couple decades ago, mm-hmm. and it was pretty fun. Pretty intense, but I'm looking forward to rewatching it.
Yeah. Do you want to do that episode in black and white?
Ooh, yeah, we should record that in black and white, yeah. I agree. Maybe with just a hint of color, though.
In black and white, that'd be so good. I'm so excited for that. All right. As always, if you guys want to rate us on Apple Podcasts, we would definitely appreciate that. If you want to send us an email, such as sending us a suggestion for the Wheel of Willis, you can email us at williswaypod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @WillisWayPod and find all of our episodes on Apple Podcasts or wherever podcasts are found.
Wherever that is. You can follow me on Twitter at @KMartinix. That's KMartinix.
And you can follow me on Twitter at @JoshingCarter.
Next week, we are going to be discussing Pulp Fiction. I am very excited to talk about this.
You are? Is this like a big movie or something?
Well, it's the first that we're going to do that's a fictional movie. It says fiction in the title.
That is true. That is true. I remembered very well Cosmic Sin happening a while ago.
Mm-hmm. That was a truth. That was a nonfiction tale.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it, and we're gonna have a special guest on, so you have a lot of stuff to look forward to. Until then, Josh signing off. Have a good day, everybody.
Goodbye. Thanks for listening. Did you know, I was looking up Sarah Jessica Parker info before we got on here. Did you know that there's a IMDb entry for TV series called Shalom Sesame?
What?
I just found out recently that different parts of the world, they have different characters on Sesame Street. So there's like a red bird on some. And it's like, what the?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I always assumed that they would just do it like Power Rangers style, where they would just redub everything. Especially if you did like shot reverse shot for every single scene. Because then you could have a local celebrity in there and then just redub the Sesame Street character.
Yeah, right. I think it's like an entirely new thing. Yeah. Hmm. This is Spanish Sesame Street.
Plaza Sesimo.
Yeah. Talking to somebody from Mexico, and they were like, what about the big green and red version of Big Bird? And I'm like, the fuck, what?
Apparently, it's like another character entirely. It's not just like their version of Big Bird.
No, it's not like Bird, Grande Bird or whatever. It's an entirely different
guy. Grande Bird. I love the idea that big is the word that is translated out of those two.
Yeah, I know Spanish. No, you know.